Hello, and welcome to the Cape Coffee Beans podcast. My name is Faden, and I'm the founder of Cape Coffee Beans, South Africa's leading retailer in the specialty coffee space. We sell everything you need to make an amazing cup of coffee at home, at the office, in the cafe, or even on the road, including equipment, accessories, and artisan roasted coffee beans, both online and in-store at our headquarters in Claremont, Cape Town. This podcast is a deep dive into the world of South African specialty coffee, with a focus on the brands, the businesses, and the people in the local coffee scene, many of whom I'm privileged to work with. I'll be bringing you interviews with many of these South African coffee heroes, so please do subscribe to the podcast and share it with your coffee-loving friends. Thank you for your support. Now let's get to today's episode. Hello, coffee lovers, and welcome to another episode of the Cape Coffee Beans podcast. We're on episode 7, so if you've been with me since the beginning, thank you for bearing with me. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've certainly had a lot of fun doing this so far and interviewing all the roasters that we work with. Though we are on episode 7 now, and as you probably realize, that means I'm running out of roasters to interview. So I'm busy thinking about what's next? Who should I interview? Should we do something different? And I would love to hear from you. If you're a regular listener, I would love to hear what you think future episodes should include. So if you have any ideas, please send me an email at podcast@capecoffeebeans.co.za and let me know what you'd like to hear. I'd be really interested to hear what the listeners might be interested in hearing more about or who they might want me to interview or any other ideas you might have. So now turning our attention to today's episode, I interview Wayne Oberhoser, one of the founders and managers of the Portland Project, although he is currently in Dubai and involved in the business remotely while his partner Sheldon runs things on the ground here. Now, we've worked with the Portland Project for a long time, and it's actually a coffee brand that we've been involved with since it got started. And today's conversation was a lot of fun for me because it really was just a walk down memory lane. Wayne and I had some fun reminiscing about how we started working together. And I really had a lot of fun just listening to Wayne talk about the coffee industry. He's been in it a long time, despite the fact that he's a relatively young guy. And I think he has some interesting opinions. He also has set up and runs a very different business model, and he's shown that a coffee career can be really interesting. You know, he's gone around the world working in coffee, and I think that for young aspiring coffee professionals, it's quite an inspiring story. So without further ado, here's my interview with Wayne. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Wayne. Welcome to the Cape Coffee Beans podcast.
Hey, Faden. Thanks a lot for having me.
So you are our first international guest. You're in Dubai at the moment, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I've been living here going on 3 years now, and it's been good. It's been interesting.
And I guess that's all part of your coffee journey, and I'm sure we can get back to that a little bit later. But it seems coffee has definitely taken you places. But before we get into the coffee stuff, one of the first questions I like to ask everybody that's been on this podcast so far is to get a sense of what they were doing before they got into the whole coffee thing. So could you give the listeners a little bit of context on your personal background? What were you doing before you got into coffee?
So it started when I was 3 or 4 years old. I had dreams and aspirations of being a pilot. So far as to going to apply at the U.S. Navy Aviation Academy and being told very quickly that as a South African, that was impossible. Right out of high school, went to flight training in Swakopmund in Pretoria. And after a while, moved back down to Durban to continue my training. My father's business at the time was kind of supporting the habit, as I like to say, although it was a full-time profession. His business kind of went a little bit south, as a lot of businesses did back then. We're talking 2007, 2008, so right about the crisis. And I got into coffee with Colombo Coffee and Tea and with Kyle Frazier. Now, I used to work with Kyle at Look and Listen back in the day, the Pavilion in Westall. And I literally never drank coffee. It was the furthest thing from me. When I drank, it was Nescafe. It was 8 spoons of sugar, as much milk as I can cram into the cup. And I just didn't understand what it is that my parents were so fascinated with it. I remember it was about 2 months into, you know, starting at Colombo, and Colombo again was just a gateway to get back into the flying, to pay for the flying at the time. I remember about 2 months in, I saw my first barista competition. The first guy that kind of stood out for me was Alessandro Morico. Didn't know him at the time, but there's this short little Italian man in a good suit. And I was like, okay, this seems pretty serious. Ben Carlson was the MC at the time. Wow. And I remember getting called up and, you know, asked to describe a cappuccino at the time. And I literally knew nothing about it. And I remember Victor Richardson from Colombo saying to me, you have until this week to drink coffee black. And that kind of started me down this journey of going, okay, well, I don't like black coffee. Let me see what it is that I can do to the coffee that doesn't involve sugar and milk, make it taste better. And that coupled with the insane fascination with the barista competition. 12 years later, here I am.
Wow. Okay. So this was back in 2008 that Correct. You were at Colombo. Okay. And yeah. And you say, so originally it was just a job to pay for the pilot pursuit.
100%. It was just, you know, I was actually working about three jobs at the time. I thought the coffee industry at the time would pay out a little bit more than I thought. Got a relatively good salary at the time, but it wasn't enough to pay for the insane amount of money you need for flying.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the biggest drives of becoming a pilot was traveling. And lo and behold, the coffee industry has really kind of done that for me.
Yeah, there you go. So I guess you've come full circle. And what was your first job at Colombo? What was your first position?
I was a sales manager / self-taught technician.
Okay.
It was pretty insane. It was just like, hey, man, we need you to come help us sell coffee. I was like, I don't drink coffee, but okay. Let me see what I can do. And yeah, kind of went from there.
That's amazing. Because I guess what's a little bit different about your story is then, you know, you got into the coffee industry at the same time that you got into coffee, whereas it doesn't sound like you had much of an interest before.
Exactly. And, you know, I distinctly remember the moment. It was about three or four months into it. At the time, Kyle Fraser used to do some side work for Diageo. And I had a growing fascination into whiskey. So we're having a little self-taught whiskey tasting evening, you know, when you're effectively a student, you know, any whiskey over 12 years old is very bourgeois. And I remember looking at him like, has this always been going on, like the coffee industry in South Africa, or are we on the cusp of something new? And I think at the time we kind of agreed that it was definitely the start of something new. And that really excited me. Like to be able to say I was there from the ground when a revolution, if you will, in coffee happened. You got to remember like the two specialty stores that we really kind of knew about was Origin, front and first foremost. And then Bean There. I mean, they kind of started at the same time. And at the time, like, you know, the other exposure we had to coffee, especially in Durban, was Nestle, Burundi, that sort of stuff. And we were really kind of fascinated. And it was incredibly exciting to try and, you know, the prospect of being in the ground. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, this podcast, admittedly, so far has been very Cape Town centric. We've, you know, talked to Joel and David and Warren and Reichardt and a lot of the other Cape Town guys. Though we've also interviewed Jonathan, who, as you say, Jonathan in Joburg was getting started around the same time that Joel and David were getting started at Origin in Cape Town. When did Colombo get started? Was it around the same time, 2005, 2006? Mm.
So Colombo is the oldest coffee company in South Africa.
Okay.
There's an old, used to be, I think it's gone now, Colombo Coffee and Tea store that was in downtown. And it was run by the Richardson family. The grandfather started it. They were very much focused on tea at the time. And I remember the first time we roasted it, I don't know if they still got it there in the old warehouse. It was a 120 kilo diesel roaster. It was like a flamethrower that kind of shut down this roaster to kind of kickstart it. It was pretty wild. Like you would slice open a bag and dump an entire 60 kg bag of Brazil or whatever you've got, and you load that thing up. I'm pretty sure I lost half my hearing from that bloody thing, but yeah, it was quite the experience. And they kind of lost their way for a very long time. They did everything from roasting peanuts to packaging, pre-packaging powdered sugar and creamers, making bulk tea. A big portion of the business was large accounts to government entities where they created like canteen packs. So you would, as a worker, you get there and you get your allotment of milk, your creamer, sugar, tea, coffee, all that sort of stuff for the month. And if you use it in a week, tough titty. And yeah, that was a big portion of it. So a big drive for Kyle and I back in 2008, 2009 was a complete rebrand. And that was originally why Kyle was brought on board. He did a marketing class with Victor at the time, Victor Richardson. And he was brought on board to help rebrand the company. And I was brought on board about 4 or 5 months later to really kind of push the sales and kind of take the company into a new direction.
Okay.
So that was really, really interesting. having to change the mindset of the workers inside the space. You know, guys who have been working there for 30 plus years. Change the mindset of our customers. You know, it was pretty harrowing. So if you look at Colombo as it is today, yeah, it started in 2008. If you look at Colombo as an entirety, as an entity, I think it's 1917, 1916 odd.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I had no idea that was the case. I suppose that in itself could be an interesting podcast because, you know, a coffee business that came from kind of more traditional commodity and then moved into specialty. I mean, that in itself is interesting. I guess for those who don't know, Colombo, I think, is probably the most or one of the most reputable specialty coffee businesses out on that side of the country. I have to admit, I don't know the Durban coffee scene as well as I know Cape Town, certainly, but Colombo is a name that I heard about, you know, the whole time from when I started Cape Coffee Beans. So that's really interesting. Maybe at some point I'll have to chat to those guys as well. But so
definitely get a hold of Kyle. He's always a hit to sit down and chat to.
Yeah, well, I've heard a lot about Kyle, and I've never chatted to him. So maybe I should look for you to connect us. But so how many years were you at Colombo?
So I was at Colombo just over 2 years.
Okay.
It was in and around the time. We went down to Cape Town for the National Barista Championships. I remember at the time we were training Dirk Moritz and Pauline Leshinsky, and they were competing at the nationals there down at Table Bay Waterfront Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's called. And they had kindly, you know, given, you know, Kyle and I were very keen on judging. So I was a technical judge and really, really enjoyed it. Kyle was a sensory judge. And we were put up in the hotel there. It was absolutely fantastic. And it was the first time in, I think I remember sitting there going, yeah, 10, maybe 12 years I'd been to Cape Town. And I was like, wow, this city is incredible. Like, you know, growing up in Durban, when I got to Cape Town, I was just like, man, I remember like driving around in the early 90s in the back of a Beetle with no sun, with a sunroof, like as a kid. And that was kind of my last memories of Cape Town. And I remember sitting, having a drink with Kyle and Dirk the one night. And I just said, yeah, man, this is, yeah, I want to live here. And I remember saying the same thing to Joanne Saraberry, who was at the time the head trainer at Origin. And she said, listen, you know, Joel will be pretty keen to have either of you on board. And that's the kind of journey started. So 2011, I joined Origin. And yeah, haven't looked back since.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things I said when I was chatting to Joel is there's this interesting theme in the coffee industry. I feel it's true throughout the country where there are a lot of people who spent some time at Origin, right? A lot of very talented people who've gone on to different things as well, who spent a bit of time at the mothership on Hudson Street.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I think At one stage, all the kind of prominent coffee companies, barring one or two, all had ex-Origin employees.
Yeah.
And I think that's more a testament to kind of Joel's business style more than anything nefarious. It was just like, you know, you hire the kind of people that it's only natural that they're going to eventually branch off and start something like this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are a lot of entrepreneurial spirits at that business for sure. And how many years were you at Origin then?
Origin was 2.5+ years, and it was a wild, a wild 2.5 years, and it was a lot of fun. I would definitely say my coffee knowledge and experience went up, 20+ fold whilst working at Origin. So that was very cool. Was it late 2010, early 2011, just after 2013. And I won my first national title whilst I was there. I got to coach Lovejoy on his first national title. It was very, very cool. It was a great space and I enjoyed working there.
Sure. Yeah. And I suppose you did overlap with many, many of the great legends, right? With Lovejoy, and I imagine Bilbo was there at the time. I don't know if Mike McDonald was already there.
Yeah, was still there. I still remember Mike starting as a waiter, getting more and more interested into his coffee. He was always the kind of guy, I see this a lot in Winston as well. He's very, very observant and he would always ask questions and always kind of, push his knowledge, but, have things on the outside. I think at one stage, Mike was making like leather goods or something like that, just to, kind of feed that creativity of his. And then eventually a kind of a spot opened up for him. Worked with Michael, with Lovejoy, with Bilbo, with Joanne. Who else has come through there? Winston, a couple of other guys. Yeah, it was a very cool time.
So for the South African coffee nerd, of course, a lot of those names are recognizable because there is an uncanny number of national barista champions within that set, right? So you've won the national barista championship twice, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And obviously Winston, who's won it now three times, came through there, and Lovejoy, who's won it, came through there. What do you think it is? How does Origin keep churning out these national barista champions?
I think it's the space and the environment, it's something I will unashamedly say I kind of stole from Joel. I would say I always hired people based on personality, not on skill. Skill is something you can teach a person in 7 days, 10 days. You can teach someone to make a cup of coffee. That is not the thing that makes them a great barista or like a great space. It is something that you have to find in a person who has a certain characteristic. And a lot of people that come to Origin are definitely driven. They're hungry for knowledge, and the knowledge that's available there, I would say at the time especially, was relatively difficult to find. We live in an age now of YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, TikTok, and at a touch of a button you can almost learn about anything online. I remember at the time, going back to the Colombo days, the most information I could find at the time was like home barista forums, which is like Reddit. You got to be very careful kind of what rabbit hole you dive down. And then James Hoffman had started a blog, and reading is not my forte, but we would spend hours and hours kind of reading. At Origin, we had access to Macanta. We had access to a relatively small roaster that allowed us to experiment. And the space itself also lent itself to learning. We have the busy times, we have the crazy days. There were days when things were a little bit down, so everyone would kind of get together and like, let's cup this, let's taste this. When it came to competition time, it was never me versus you. It was like, cool guys, how are we doing this together? All right, if you're willing to put in the time and the effort, I'll help you. We had it at one point, obviously, with all the champions that kind of came through there, and the great coffee people, Cuth, Willem, to name a few previous to us. a lot of the baristas saw this as an opportunity to obviously elevate themselves. So we used to actually have in-house testing where we said, okay, well, you know, we're going to make sure that you're reading up on the rules, that you understand what it is you need to do. You have to hit these certain KPIs, if you will, in order for us to sponsor you and spend and invest in the money to let you train. You know, a lot of baristas think, oh, it's easy. You know, I'll just train, you know, the company will understand it's in their best interest. I was like, well, it's a bit of a double-edged sword. You know, training is incredibly taxing on the business because now as a manager or an owner, I have to give you free time, time that I've got to pay you for because, you know, as you say, you're representing me. So, you know, we've got to find that balance. Also know that you're going to work later hours whilst you're training, which means when you come to work where you're being paid and you're generating money for the cafe or the company, you're not going to be at your best. So there's a taxation there almost. So it's a bit of a funny line that a company needs to kind of to walk. And I find that through the kind of testing and stuff, we weeded out a couple of guys who just, you know, thought competing would be easy and fun. It's fun, 100%. It's definitely not easy.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's easy to get in there, but definitely difficult and progressively more difficult as you get near the top rankings, right? Like the, you know, probably easy to get in and place in 10th or 15th or something like that. But to get in those top spots, it really does take. I mean, I've watched a lot of those winning sets over the last few years, and it really, really does take a lot of investment to get there.
100%. And, you know, not to take away from the previous champions, you know, the level of competition now is just, it's literally next level, you know. Yeah. And even from a judging standpoint, you know, we've seen a massive swing and change. And these are good things. And I think these trickle down into the industry. And that's always a positive outcome most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you spent your 2.5 years at Origin. You got your first national title. How did you come to start your coffee business, the Portland Project?
So before that, I actually joined the guys from Deluxe Coffee Company. Judd and I used to hang out a fair bit. And at the time, I was going through some personal stuff with an ex-girlfriend, and I just needed a bit of a change. And the opportunity kind of presented itself to live and work in Mauritius. And so for 2+ years, I was the point man for Deluxe at Cafe Lux or Lux Hotels. And I spent the next 2.5 years traveling between Mauritius, Reunion, the Maldives, Turkey, and China, helping them set up their coffee companies within their hotels. So it was a new concept that these guys had come up with, and we set up a roastery in Mauritius and Maldives, and then later on Turkey and China. And we would actually roast all the coffee there, and we would have a proper setup, you know, in the hotel. You know, hotel coffee is absolutely trash, generally speaking. And these guys wanted to take it to the next step level, and more than a next step up. I think the one GM explained to me how he knew this concept was going to work so well. He was at the Marriott in Hong Kong, like one of the more famous ones. I can't remember the name. And he would watch every morning people literally for breakfast coming downstairs, walking out of the hotel, going to across the road to the local Starbucks, picking up their $3, $4, $5 cup of coffee, coming back into their super expensive hotel and drinking that instead of whatever they were trying to serve them at breakfast. And so that really kind of evolved and changed my thinking around coffee. I really got more into the business around it, having, you know, the kind of questions and problems and solutions we had to come up with, especially on an island like Mauritius, or even more so on an island like in the Maldives. That kind of evolved what Portland would eventually become. Right. So yeah, Portland. Sorry. Portland started as, I don't want to say out of frustration, because that seems, you know, at the time I was definitely a little bit frustrated with the positioning I was at. I loved what I was doing and the people I was working with, but I just felt like I could do more, and I was being a little bit hamstrung at the time. But the you know, the eventual kind of gap came from a very good friend, well, not a very good friend of mine, Sheldon, my business partner, who is one of my cousin's oldest and best friends. And, you know, kind of hinted a few times, like if I was keen on doing something, this and that. And eventually I said to him, listen, I want to take the coffee industry business model and I want to turn it on its head a little bit. I want to make something a little bit light and loose. We had a bit of a game plan. And that game plan has been executed over the last 3.5 years. And yeah, it's been really, really good for us. Took an investment from him, handed my resignation at Deluxe. Here we are a couple of years later.
And the rest is history. Yeah. And you guys have come a long way for sure. But I'm kind of curious to hear a little bit more about, you know, how the seeds were planted in terms of what you were doing on that gig with Deluxe. I mean, I will give you credit that, like, yep, that sounds like maybe it was the best gig in the coffee industry in Africa, you know, in terms of traveling to all these places and setting up roasteries. And I have to give you and the Deluxe guys credit. You know, I think setting up roasteries on site just makes so much sense when so many of these hotel yep. brands are flying in cheap, terrible, stale Italian coffee, you know, to that, as you point out, the guests then don't even want to drink.
And it's probably worse than that, Faden. They're buying really expensive coffee as well, and just expensive bad coffee.
Yeah.
You know, it was the Deluxe approach to coffee was something that we had explored at Origin, and I think it was a natural progression. I think James Hoffman had played with the idea a few times with some Michelin star chefs in London, and it just seemed like the natural progression, right? It was about how to explain this best. A lot of what makes coffee great as an industry and as a company and as a business is also the things that make it incredibly difficult as a business. What I mean by that is your gut feel. How do you quantify gut? How do you quantify, I have a feeling that X, Y, Z? And all I can rely on is past examples of experiments, for lack of a better word, that have kind of transitioned throughout the year, throughout the times of my being in coffee. During Colombo, we didn't have a cafe at all. I remember Victor one time went on holiday. He went on a study break. He was studying. He was doing his MBA or something like that. And he had a 3-month gap. And for lack of a better term, we basically stole 50,000 Rand from the company and built a cafe in the roastery. And obviously not stolen, but reinvested.
They got to keep it, right?
Yeah, they got to keep it. They got something out of it. A very sturdy brick wall, I might add, which I've made myself. Myself, Dirk Moritz, and Carl Fraser literally built the space. And we were insistent. We said, no food. Absolutely no food. Just a pure coffee experience. You sit in the roastery, you just drink coffee. And we're pretty proud of ourselves with this idea and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, people came in and we got some regulars. But the numbers just weren't there. You know, the numbers just weren't feeding the business. And after much toiling and backwards and forwards, Colin, myself and Dirk agreed. We said, okay, well, let's put some brownies in. Faden, our sales tripled. Our sales tripled and we hardly sold any brownies. So what's the point of the story is that this gut feeling about people's interaction with coffee or spaces is fed by these kinds of experiences, right? The gut feeling for a lot of customers is, I'm going to go to Colombo. I'm not hungry right now and I want coffee. But if I get hungry, I'm going to have to make the mission of getting in my car, driving somewhere else and eating. I might as well just go there, eat and drink the okay coffee, then enjoy something there, right? I still see this today at Drop here in Dubai. Our food sales account for 12% of our sales. I guarantee you that if you show me monthly sales within 1 to 2,000 dirham, I'll be on the button. And this kind of transitioned into the hotel experience. Lux and all five-star hotels very, very commonly have Michelin star chefs, famous celebrity chefs that come in and start restaurants and cafes and all that sort of stuff. Oh, sorry, restaurants in the hotels. And it always blew my mind, as well as in offices and all that sort of stuff, that coffee was the last thing people, really kind of thought of as a purchasing manager, as an accountant, as a quantifiable mix, right? But I broke it down for them very simply. And we said, look, what's the first thing you do in the morning? You know, you go to the bathroom, you do your thing, you brush your teeth. Most people are either going to have a glass of orange juice, a cup of tea, or coffee. The tea experience is, another story for another day, is relatively easy.
Yeah.
And there's ways to make it relatively good easily. The orange juice experience, I mean, orange juice, you buy quality orange juice, there you go. But the coffee experience is incredibly difficult for a range of reasons. I said to the guys, listen, the last thing you want is a customer who's maybe a little hungover from the party in the night before, who's a little bit tired, who's a little bit on edge, you know, the kids are driving him a little bit insane. And now he's going to sit down at this $1,000+ night hotel and drink a shitty cup of coffee. And the only way that he is going to get a decent cup is to get in a taxi or walk across the road and pay exorbitant prices when he's like, listen, man, I'm on full board. Why the hell am I drinking bad coffee here? You go today and look at the TripAdvisor reports, quotes, experiences for Lux hotels. I guarantee you 85-90% of them mention the coffee. The product that for years and generations, people were just like, well, it's just coffee. Like, you know, give them brown water. It's all good. Literally gets brought up in hotel reviews. The same hotel reviews that is going to have a go at you because the pillow was slightly less comfortable than the experience. You got that kind of person and you think that giving them bad coffee is going to fly?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've hit on something so important there, you know, for any business owner that may be listening to this as well, is that I think you've hit on the subtlety, which is that for the average person who isn't in the coffee industry like us, coffee isn't the main event, right? Like, as you said, like when you, if Colombo didn't have another offering, people may not have gone there as much because people combine coffee in other parts of their day, their meal, their breakfast, their newspaper reading. But at the same time, it's so important to them. And if you get it wrong, you really color their whole experience.
100%. No, you're absolutely right. It's sometimes not the main event. And for very few people, it is maybe now 20% of the market, which is doesn't sound like a lot. But if we look back 12 years, it was probably 3% of the market. Mm. But it is always been and will always be the social lubricant that really kind of brings a lot of people together.
Yeah.
And that people can enjoy whatever way they really want.
Yeah. So how did you take that lesson and translate it into what you wanted to do with the Portland project?
So the Portland project was a, for lack of a better word, a pipe dream. The name always kind of alluded to it. Everyone thought I was weird for calling it Portland. I'm pretty sure a lot of people still do. Anybody that has seen or interacted with anyone from the city of Portland, US, will know that it's a city that it's like a microcosm of a range of different industries, right? It was like craft beer, craft coffee, specialty coffee rather, crazy foods, and just the kind of culture that really kind of focused heavily on like small businesses and focus on being light and adaptable. At the time, I started getting into also my experience with the, the hotels. I got exposed to a lot of great bartenders and stuff like that. And started to explore mixology in terms of cocktails and all that sort of stuff. And I started to realize more and more that coffee shops need to be adaptable. They need to be able to change every 2 to 5 years. They need to be able to be light on their feet. Mm-hmm. And the thing that always holds a coffee company down is the massive expanse of equipment, the massive expanse of roasteries, the massive expanse of space. And I wanted to create a business model that allowed us to be a little more flexible on that. Maybe not making the same percentages as the average coffee company, but being able to weather the storm in times like COVID, for instance, because our overheads are so incredibly low. Mm-hmm. You know, we were able to, I said, we need to be light on our feet. We need to be able to take a model and adjust it depending on the wants and needs of a customer. Now, from the guy who wants to do a luxe style cafe and offering, here we go, here's the offering. We work with these roasters, these equipment companies, these fit out people, and then onto another space that wanted to do a cart. So we were really much about a project, and the Portland project, the project side of the name being, we are constantly, a project that is always in work. It's always in development. So it was never a kind of a set thing that, you know, just remained stagnant. So I wanted to be light on our feet, easy to work with. And yeah, we've kind of achieved that eventually over 3.5 years, but we got there.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I would say that you guys have actually gotten there quite quickly, right? A lot of the other coffee businesses that I know and have spoken to have been around a heck of a lot longer. And I would say that, I mean, you know, I believe that you and I got to know each other and first met very early in that creation of the Portland project. I don't know if it was...
Yeah. First retail outlet.
Yeah, there you go, right? And you know, there we were, two one-man or, you know, small shows at any rate, and we kind of got started. And I remember we started selling some of the Portland coffee, and obviously it was an unheard of brand at the time, which is also not something that I'd, you know, dealt with before, because generally I'd approach the kind of well-established brands. But I suppose you had a reputation in the coffee industry, which certainly helped propel the Portland Project brand to get started. And definitely, you'd also found some really great coffees. I remember some of those early coffees, the Burundi, the Kundikawa, and a couple of others, which were really stunning. And people got to know them, and it started to take off.
No, 100%. It was a lot of fun. It was scary. I still remember doing deliveries on my older motorbike too.
Yes.
it was a very cool kind of, you know, rise to, you know. How many guys you got working for you at the moment? I think I saw your staff photo end of last year. It was phenomenal. It's like, gosh, man, here's a business that I remember a couple who remain nameless guys like, oh, this won't work in South Africa. You just can't do it, blah, blah, blah. And you found a way through, you know, your connections with the courier industry, I mean, being always the restrictive thing, but also your drive and your ability to retain knowledge and kind of learn and question, which was always cool. I remember like a couple of times coming to do deliveries and ended up having to, you know, end up chatting for 45 plus minutes just because. It has been a rise for quite some time for us. There have been some challenges, of course, you know, getting people to understand what it is we're trying to achieve. Whilst my name does carry weight in the industry, a big portion of our business was never going to be just South Africa. Was always going to be targeting overseas markets, looking a little bit beyond our borders. I wanted to use the ability that we have in South Africa to produce products relatively inexpensively and ship it worldwide. And those products, not just a physical bag of coffee, but people. You know, send a guy like Lovejoy to a hotel and have him train someone for 2 weeks, and give me the ability to help other South Africans experience what I experienced in those 3 years at Deluxe.
Yeah, well, and I suppose the typical Cape Coffee Beans customer really only knows the retail coffee side of the Portland project, and you've alluded to some of the other stuff that you're doing, and obviously you're sitting in Dubai as well. So maybe just describe, what does the Portland project look like now? What has it evolved into beyond just, you know, a great coffee brand?
So at the moment, we've got myself and Sheldon as the core directors. I would definitely say that Sheldon is the big driving force in the company at the moment. He handles everything day to day, and he kind of coordinates with our different suppliers and our customers. We also we hired my mother, as I'm sure you've met her a few times.
Rita's with us almost every day at this point, delivering coffee.
There we go. So she's a driver slash delivery mom. She always has a great way with people, which is fantastic. And then we work closely with a couple equipment suppliers, guys from Morico and ColdServe. And then we have a strong relationship with Rock and Roller. And right now, that's kind of us.
And in terms of the markets you serve, because I do think that your business, I mean, you've been quite shrewd in that you're not necessarily going after the same markets that everybody else is going after, right? I mean, like, of course, there's some overlap. You know, you've got your retail bags, you've got your cafe clients, but you know, you don't have your own cafe. You're going after offices and things like that.
Yeah, so office suppliers, catering suppliers. We've got a couple, like you said, a couple of cafes and our retail side of the business. It's always fun to kind of watch how the two kind of feed each other. You know, the original goal was to have our own space, which creates its own problems, but also creates its own solutions. At the end of the day, when you go through certain crises and stuff, it's amazing to watch different industries kind of bounce back and move forward. But yeah, a big portion of our business is in the catering and on-site canteens, if you will. We work with a couple guys who have trailers at different office parks and everything like that, and they service, you know, customers within the office park space environment.
Yeah. Well, I think it is such a shrewd business model, and I imagine that to some small extent, you guys must be feeling relief that you've chosen that business model in this current environment, right? The guys who have cafes, very sadly, are suffering, and as you say, you guys are in a position to be quite nimble and operate with small overheads, and I suppose that model right now is probably the best business model you can be in. You know, I would say that all the great business model and insights into how to approach the market aside, I do think that one of the things that also really propels your brand and within the small world of Cape Coffee Bean certainly gets people coming back is that you do have some really great coffees, right? So talk a little bit about your approach to kind of sourcing those coffees and roasting those coffees, and, you know, how do you tackle that? How do you think about how you position Portland Project Coffees?
So the original plan was, initially, a lot of the coffee choices were really kind of driven by price, in not the sense of let's buy the cheapest coffee possible. That just doesn't make sense. Too often I found what happened with other companies was they'll come in and undercut the market, and then 6 months later be 40, 50 Rand more expensive. Mm-hmm. So I said from the get-go, listen, we're going to make small margins in the beginning and we're going to build up volume. Then we're going to expand that volume and allow us to make more shrewd and better purchasing decisions. Those purchasing decisions also allowed us to buy better green coffee at a larger bulk because we had the kind of flexibility and the capability to purchase such large quantities. So we built up a network within the green suppliers in South Africa, everything from Seven Oaks to Falcon and whatnot. The challenge always being something that is adjustable, and that's why I've always been a huge proponent of single origins. Mm-hmm. That whilst being said, we do have two blends, but the two blends that we do sell are marketed as seasonal. And I think at the time when we launched, the market was ready to kind of understand what seasonality meant. You know, Evos aren't available year in, year out, and so on and so forth, unless you're in Dubai. But we wanted to make sure that we were able to get high quality coffee that was consistent, that met the kind of needs of our customers and consumers, and produce a product that was delicious. We've had some really expensive coffees, the Geisha I used at the WBC and the South African Barista Champs, which we did as an exclusive through you guys. I absolutely love that coffee. And that was sourced from the guys from Hasbeen in the UK. So where we needed to, we would pull coffee from there. The challenge over the last 3 years has been, well, Wayne, you're in Dubai and you know, Portland's and in Cape Town. The beautiful thing about the world at the moment is we are so interconnected that most of the green that I buy here, I can get back home in South Africa. Mm. So I'm able to taste coffee here and say, cool, guys, this is what I want. And then also make some decisions in terms of roasting profiles. Say, okay, well, these are the kind of profiles I want you guys to run. This is what I want you to do. You know, a couple of things slip through the cracks. Like every company, we've had our issues. But I think for the most part, we've been able to stay ahead of the curve through great knowledge from our green suppliers. You know, I remember six, seven years ago, you know, talking to a green supplier and saying, cool, what, tell me about this Guatemala. Oh, it's a SHBEP. I'm like, that's great, mate. But so is every other Guatemala that comes out of Guatemala. Like, what's the altitude? What's the varietal? What's the, you know, this, that. And they just kind of look at you blank stares. Now, at a kind of a click of a button, you can say, hey, guys, can you give me the breakdown of this coffee? And they're like, cool, here it is. This harvest date. This is the lot number. This is that, so on and so forth. You can make some strategic decisions based on that. That coupled with, you know, trusting your green suppliers. You know, Seven Oaks now got Michael there helping them out. We still buy a fair bit of coffee from Ben Carlson and his whole connections. And he's kind of moved on a little bit. But, you know, we can trust a lot of these guys. And they say, okay, well, these are the taste notes we're getting. We buy the samples. We cup, we test. And we're like, yeah, that's pretty much bang on. I want to run this profile based on what I want to achieve for my customers. And then we go from there.
Yeah. Well, and I have to really emphasize for anybody listening who hasn't experienced kind of the full gamut of what the Portland Project has done over the last few years is that you really have demonstrated that nimbleness that you set out to have, because you've got a very affordable but very palatable, nice seasonal espresso blend. You've got your full city blend, which caters more to the more traditional palate. But then at the same time, you guys have, you know, had some incredible bang for your bucks, really lovely single origin coffees, what I would say kind of middle tier. And you've also provided Cape Coffee Beans with two of the most expensive and best coffees that we've ever sold, right? Like the Benchmaji Geisha that you mentioned, and Pedro. Let's not forget Pedro as well, that Colombian that you used the second time you won the national championships. And that's actually quite a feat, right? Like that you can operate at all different ends of the pricing and quality spectrum and have success with it. There aren't a lot of coffee brands that can do that. So I think that speaks to that nimbleness that you mentioned.
100%. And I think it's very much a culmination of, you know, a lot of people like with relationships, they're like, oh, you know, I can't believe I dated that person. I can't believe I did this. And with jobs, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I worked there or I lived there or I did this. I'm like, you are the sum of all your parts. You are the sum of every experience that you've had. There are elements of Deluxe. There are elements of Colombo, and there's elements of Origin in Portland. Mm. And from day one, we've kind of paid homage to that. If you look at our logo pays homage to my experience in the coffee industry, from the portafilter handles, from the plants, from from everything within that skull. And Los Muertes is a celebration of your ancestry, right? So the Los Muertes on the Portland skull is a celebration of my coffee ancestry, of my journey from Colombo to Origin to Deluxe to in part Cafe Lux, and now Drop. This has, you know, molded and shaped what our business has become.
And what do you think the future holds for the Portland Project?
I think, like most coffee companies at the moment, there's going to be a big shift and change in the approach to everyday coffee. You know, 5 years ago, if I said to you, let's invest in Nespresso and let's invest in capsule coffee, people would look at me funny and say, well, you've lost your damn mind. I do think that we're going to have to agree that, and I think a lot of people got in there, not everyone is invested in coffee as we are. Not everybody is invested into drinking it or the journey of it. And we need to create products that are flexible, that can appeal to the average consumer. Mm-hmm. I think that from, you know, a couple of testing and tastings and all that sort of stuff we've done with capsules, it's going to be a very interesting market in the next 5 to 8 years. I think that the cafe model is adjusting, is changing. You know, I take where I'm currently working at now at Drop here in Dubai. Dubai is a beautiful, beautiful window into what I think the coffee industry is going to become. You come here and you go to cafes and you walk into Drop and it feels like a high quality bar. And I say to everyone, I was like, yeah, because the coffee shops in Dubai are the bars of the UAE. People, you know, locals don't drink, but they love their coffee. Our cafe opens from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., 11 p.m. Our busiest times are from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. We're starting to see more and more people, funnily enough, gravitate away from alcohol. You know, we're going to see more and more people starting to say, well, you know, I still want to have a cool space to hang out. Why not a cool coffee shop? And so we want to help people to create and to build on what they think they want and then adjust it. That's always the biggest challenge, right? You know, people are like, oh, coffee company, these are great. These are fun. when you're coming in at 5 in the morning for the 30th day in a row, you tell me how much fun it is. And we need to be able to help and adjust to those wants and needs. And, you know, all seriousness, like I say to anyone, if you really want to know where the coffee industry is going, come to Dubai. There's a lot happening here. There's a lot changing here. The guys move fast, sometimes a little bit too fast. You know, there's a propensity to say, okay, well, let's just throw money at the problem. I got to say the partners that I'm working with over here haven't done that, which is great. They said, well, let's invest smartly. There's some paperwork and everything behind it, but there's definitely a lot of gut feel and it tends to pay off. So I think that, you know, coffee companies are going to have to adjust. They're going to have to change. They're going to have to be light on their feet. They're going to have to pay people better. They're going to have less staff. And the consumer is going to have to change. The consumer is our biggest bottleneck at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you know, running an online retailer in South Africa during this pandemic and lockdown situation, I really am getting the sense that this, you know, indirectly is changing the South African coffee consumer to some extent. Mm. I think that, you know, Joel and I talked about this right at the beginning of the lockdown period. And I think it's becoming more and more true is that the South African coffee consumer here, and I suppose this applies everywhere in the world, but like they're having to wake up to the reality that, you know, good coffee can't be an only cafe thing because right now they don't have access to their cafe. And I think they're waking up to the fact that it can be part of a really high-end, luxurious experience at home. And it doesn't just have to be a hit of caffeine from whatever source in the home. And I think that's exciting for the future.
You know, something we're doing out here, Faden, is obviously during the lockdown, unlike South Africa, we were allowed to do deliveries, food delivery. Food was considered part of essential services. And something I've resisted from day one is takeaway coffee, delivery coffee, rather. Deliveroo, Uber Eats, Careem, these kinds of things. And we found quite a bit of success here with the business model being able to adjust to it. But I think that the products around what you can deliver on the back of a motorbike is very limited.
Yeah.
And we've already started talking to a couple packaging companies to really look at how do we deliver a quality coffee of, say, a high standard cortado, flat white, to a guy who is a 20-minute drive away from us.
Mm.
And we're starting to see some movement around that. I think, don't get it twisted, I think COVID is going to be around for quite a while, and I think it's something that's going to affect all these industries for a very long time, and we're going to have to adapt or die.
Yeah.
And creating products like easy to drink blends that we do at Portland, create solutions through biodegradable capsules that people can put into their already inexpensive Nespresso machine, to not shun people away from 300 grand filter machines, and to get them onto sites like Cape Coffee Beans, where if they want to dive in a little bit deeper, they can buy a full V60 set and whatnot. And I think that's going to start to change. And what I would love to see is courier companies like Uber Eats, like Deliveroo, delivering your bag of coffee to you first thing in the morning. I find it amazing that I can get a full gourmet meal in 45 minutes to an hour on the back of a motorbike. But if I want to buy some capsules or some ground coffee, I got to wait a day.
Yeah.
You know, these things are going to change. Obviously, there's a huge issue of networks and all that sort of stuff. I think that's where a lot of stuff is going to start to evolve. And it's going to be super, super interesting. I think the next 18 months are going to be incredibly telling for the industry itself.
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely interesting times. And I think that a lot of business models are being forced to rapidly evolve or die. So it's, we're going to see what's coming. So Wayne, go ahead.
No worries. I mean, for you guys, I always found the challenge was getting people to understand the concept of buying their coffee online or just purchasing online in a big way. Have you seen a massive change in that now over the last 6 to 8 months?
Yeah.
And we've definitely seen it in terms of the sales to you guys. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, so during the very first portion of the lockdown here, obviously we were prohibited from dispatching almost anything. Then at some point we were able to dispatch coffee, but not anything else. And as soon as that happened, my mind was blown in terms of how the coffee volume started increasing, because obviously, you know, we've been around for a little while. We have a very loyal small community, but we've just seen more and more new customers coming online to buy beans for the first time and coming back and doing it again and again. And the volumes really have gone up quite significantly. And I do, I think it's those guys who would have gone to the cafe, right? They would have gone to get a really nice cup of coffee in a cafe, and they don't have access to that. And now they're dipping their toe in and trying to make it for themselves at home. And that's exciting. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not how I would have planned it, but it's been good for the Cape Coffee Beans business model. But I do think that it's going to change that South African perception, or that, you know, relatively pervasive perception that good coffee is something you have in a cafe and instant is what you have at home. And then, you know, there are ways to spread that experience around.
And also, I think it really kind of justify why you pay what you pay for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's still a notion of, well, I'm paying more than 40 Rand or 30 Rand for 250 gram of coffee, or I'm paying more than 15 Rand for, you know, a flat white, or why am I doing this? I think, you know, like I said earlier, the consumer's mindset has to change a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's a conversation that Joel and I have had quite a bit as well. But the funny truth in the South African market at the moment is that you can get a bag of some of the best beans that you're going to taste for the same cost per cup as one of the worst cappuccinos that you can get somebody to make for you, you know? So if you make the investment in a bit of equipment, there's a way to really step up the quality of what you're enjoying. Speaking of which, Wayne, the last question I want to ask you, and as an ex-barista champion or two-time barista champion, I think this will be particularly interesting to people to hear. I always like to end with hearing a little bit about how you're brewing your coffee for yourself. Now, obviously, you have access to a lot of high-end cafe equipment, but I want to specifically hear about How are you making your coffee at home, and what kinds of coffees have you been drinking over the last couple of days?
So this is going to probably fly in the face of a lot of that great introduction. I use a Black & Decker filter machine with a timer most times at home. I absolutely love filter coffee, but the first thing in the morning, if anyone like my staff can attest to, when I walk into the cafe, without even asking me, they serve me a flat white. They serve me a cortado and a V60, because they know, like, just get away in some coffee. And I bought a filter machine here for home. It's got a built-in timer. I ground the coffee that night. I put it in the filter. I leave it overnight, and I wake up in the morning and my coffee's ready. The downside was I couldn't find one with a stainless steel carafe. So during lockdown, I moved the coffee machine into the office and was, like, you know, pouring extra cups from there, which I hated because of the heat, the hot plate, that just drives me insane. So I bought a little, 200 Rand, thermos, and I put my coffee in there. The other way I really enjoy making my coffee is AeroPress. I absolutely love it. I got really smart at it, and taught my wife to be how to make it. So that was super helpful. So she would, on my coming down to the grinder, I could hear her downstairs just grinding away by hand, 16 grams of coffee. There was my AeroPress first thing in the morning.
Nice.
Those would be my two kind of go-to. Filter coffee for me is my absolute favorite. It's going to shock people, especially being a barista champion. Espresso is my least favorite way of drinking coffee. I think any coffee that's incredibly heavy, I don't enjoy. Anything that's really kind of full of mouthfeel, like a really kind of heavy mouthfeel, I don't really enjoy. I like my light, clean, sweet kind of coffees, a little more acidic than most would enjoy. I think it harps back to the first proper V60 I had made for me from Joanne at Origin. It was a Kenya Kirimahiga, and it tasted, it smelled like a punnet of strawberries and tasted like cherry fizz pop. And that for me was like the turning point, really, where I was like, okay, I gotta start drinking much better coffee. The current coffee I'm drinking at the moment is a beautiful Guji that we get from our suppliers here in Dubai. We roast everything ourselves at Drop. And we get some really, really great coffee. Everything from cafe imports to a little bit of coffee from Nordic Approach. And we are working with a company called Ali Coffee mainly at the moment. And that coffee is super clean, cherry, strawberries, a little bit of like that mango mouthfeel. It's quite nice.
Amazing. Well, you've made my mouth start watering there. It might be time for another cup of coffee this morning. But that's cool. Wayne, that was really, really great conversation. I feel like I learned some more about your story there as well. So thank you for sharing all of that. I'm sure that people will enjoy listening to it.
Anytime. And guys, you know, be open to learning, be open to trying new things. Even if it's equipment and stuff you thought you'd never try, give it a bash. And yeah, this is what I love about the coffee industry. You think you dive down one rabbit hole and you end up in another and you end up in another, and it's just a vicious cycle of learning. And then you go back to the thing you learned before and it's all changed and, you know, it's evolved, and that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. You know, I've now been in the coffee industry 7 years, which is, I mean, isn't as long as you have certainly, but I still feel like I'm just scratching the surface. And I think that exploration is definitely what makes it interesting. So
I fully agree.
Wayne, thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for your time, and all the best for the rest of the coffee adventures in Dubai.
Thank you very much, Faden. And hope to hear from you again soon, and we'll chat soon, bud.
Chat soon. Thanks, Wayne. Wasn't that a great episode? I really enjoyed that one. I have to admit, after recording it with Wayne, I thought to myself, I think we missed this guy here in Cape Town. Hopefully he'll come back to the Cape Town coffee scene eventually. As always, if you want to support one of the roasters or coffee brands that I speak to in these episodes, you can find their beans at Cape Coffee Beans, and I will include that in the show notes. I definitely encourage you to check out what the Portland Project has to offer. Their espresso blends are particularly popular with our customers, but I do enjoy quite a few of their single origin coffees as well. And don't forget, if you have any suggestions on what I should be doing in future episodes, I would love to hear from you. Please email me at podcast@capecoffeebeans.co.za with your ideas. I'd love to hear what you have in mind. Until next time, happy brewing.